Chapter 2, Defining and Discussing Digital Storytelling, Helping Teachers See, Think, and Talk About Digital Storytelling. Defining Digital Story. Oehler's axiom of vagueness states that combining two vague, expansive concepts produces something that is at best only slightly less vague and expansive than either one individually, such is the case with combining digital and story. Digital refers to literally anything associated with the information age, and story means so many things to so many people that it defies strict definition. Combining the two terms covers a good deal of territory and evokes the following description rather than definition. Digital storytelling, DST, uses personal digital technology to combine a number of media into a coherent narrative. As we see DST play out in classrooms, the following characteristics are also usually implied. Digital stories in education are typically driven by an academic goal, use low-end technology that is commonly available to students, and usually are in the form of short, 2 to 4 minute, quasi-movies that an audience watches via computer or other digital means. In addition, they are frequently posted for public viewing via video services like YouTube, if the school district allows YouTube access, or many of the other media video services that continue to become available through the internet. Later in this chapter, I describe a number of stories, most of which use a very common DST format. Voiceover narration supported by still pictures, music, and titles, reminiscent of many documentaries. But others use video performance, animation, and other technologies and techniques. At the end of this chapter, I take a look at the future of DST and how new technological developments and evolving social needs will impact the development of this field. How big is story? Ask your coworkers to tell you the first thing that comes to mind when you say the word story. I did, and here's what they said. Fairy tale, excuse for not doing something. News. You, apparently because I tell lots of stories. Great book I just read. Movie I saw. Trying to get out of trouble. Too confusing. Important to native culture. Floor of a building. How we learn. Cucumber? Huh? What's personal and important to me? Never ending. The arc. It's unanimous. Story is big. Digital storytelling and new media narrative. Within the discussion of DST in this book, I use another term, new media. This is a broad-reaching term that roughly refers to any digital media production beyond print. Video, image development, audio production, and basically all of the things we have been creating with microcomputers for the last 30 years, with the possible exception of simple word process documents. Basically, the world of new media is the world of multimedia. Please note that as of the second edition of this book, new media is hardly new anymore. I think it's fair to say that while every digital story qualifies as a new media production, not every new media production is a digital story. The key determinant is story and what it means to you as a teacher and audience member. In turn, how you define story will shape the requirements you want to establish for the digital stories you assign students to create. In Part 2, I cover guidelines for creating effective stories in some detail, regardless of the media you use, which should prove helpful in addressing this issue. There is a third term I use that I often find more helpful in describing the world of personal media production than DST. New media narrative. Narrative is a bit broader in its implications than story, and does a better job of capturing the diverse nature of the world of individual media expression. And whereas the word digital implies technical methodology, the word media, more importantly, implies expressing oneself before an audience. Furthermore, the term new media captures the decentralized spirit of the current revolution, in which media production and distribution are available to the general public. But I selected to use the term digital storytelling in this book because it's recognizable to so many. However, it's all new media narrative to me. Teachers talk about digital storytelling. To many teachers, the rapid evolution of digital technology is both exciting and inspiring, as well as intimidating and confusing. As teachers watch students create new media with handheld technology, navigate the tech ecosystem with ease, and treat today's technology like intelligent appliances, they struggle to understand their role in their students' lives. This is why I try to create a space for teachers during my workshops to simply talk about their hopes and fears about student media production in education. They usually welcome the opportunity, noting that while they know how important the topic is, there is very little time for encouragement to discuss it within their professional environments. T. Ecosystem. Ecosystem with a T. It's the ecosystem created by humans consisting of digital technology, connectivity, and the flow of communication they facilitate. It's important to note that most teachers who attend my workshops are creating their first and last digital story. I found that most come to learn enough to be helpful to their students and to be able to understand DST as a classroom activity, rather than as a technical event, both very laudable goals. That is why discussing the value and limitations of DST is so important. To facilitate their dialogue, I usually begin workshops by showing a series of student or teacher-developed projects that have been identified as digital stories or new media productions by their creators. After each showing, I typically ask teachers to do a quick write focused on the following questions, with their responses serving as the basis for the discussion that follows. What are your overall impressions of what you just saw? This encourages them to see digital stories openly, free from shoulds about what a piece of new media ought to look like. How could it be used in education? This encourages them to see digital stories within the context of education, in general terms. How would you assess what you saw? This encourages them to see them in practical terms as a classroom teacher who needs to determine their utility in meeting curricular objectives. Most participants have never had an opportunity to look at new media production in a focused, reflective manner among colleagues. Conversations are fascinating, insightful, and often spirited. Most conversations focus in some way on the topic of assessing digital stories. Teachers want to understand how to evaluate new media in ways that make sense to them and their students within the professional context of their school, district, and state and federal mandates. Digital story examples. What follows are descriptions of some of the digital stories I have shown during workshops. Following the descriptions, I will try to capture a number of the more interesting and helpful discussions I've had with teachers about these stories in particular, and about the nature and utility of new media production in the classroom in general terms. Fox becomes a better person. This story was created and performed by Hannah, a fourth grader in the Native Culture Immersion Program in Juneau, Alaska. It's a story about a fox who was too mean to have friends and who turned to the neighborhood dove for personal counseling. Hannah's performance was video recorded in front of a green screen, which allowed her original crayon artwork to be added behind her in post-production, using the same kind of chroma key editing used in weather broadcasts and professional cinema production, just as in any of the Harry Potter movies. The result is Hannah telling her story in front of her own artwork. It is interesting to note that had all of the technology failed, the project still would have been successful as a traditional storytelling performance. However, the students would not have had any of the digital or media literacy opportunities that chroma key editing provided. Length, 5 minutes. A day at school. A student with severe physical challenges narrates an average day at school presented as a series of pictures that she has asked others to take of her. Because of her disabilities, she is unable to speak unaided, so her voiceover narration comes through a message communication system. Emotional instrumental music plays throughout the entire piece. Length, 1 minute. My piano. A teacher tells the story of what the piano has meant to her throughout her life, beginning with her parents requiring her to learn to play the piano as a child, largely against her will, and ending with her feelings of gratitude towards her parents for making music a part of her life. She used scanned images, largely consisting of old photos, and herself playing simple, compelling piano music as she narrated the story. Length, 4 minutes. Superbugs. To demonstrate their understanding of a drug-resistant bacteria called superbugs, two students created a digital story in which Bobby tries to discover why he can't manage to shake his illness despite treatment from his doctor. It turns out that Bobby did not complete his full course of antibiotics and has created a colony of superbugs that are resistant to his medication. Bobby's doctor explains how superbugs are created and ends with this admonition: don't mess around with antibiotics. The students use graphs and scientific illustrations that were narrated by a conversation between the two of them. Length, 4 minutes. Elizabeth Peratrovich, an Alaskan hero. A straightforward mini-documentary about Alaskan civil rights leader Elizabeth Peratrovich. This piece mixes archival material, well-researched narrative, and the deft use of music to draw the narrative arc of Alaska's journey from the early days of blatant prejudice against Alaska's natives to the passage of a law prohibiting it. Length, 4 minutes. King John. A first-person narrative documentary presented from the perspective of King John on the day he signed the Magna Carta. In this piece, the narrator, King John, reflects on recent history and how the development of something as momentous as the Magna Carta came to be. It combines a fictional personalization of King John while embedding the presentation in historical fact. Length, 3 minutes. Double replacement reaction. Using tabletop video shot of someone using Legos to simulate chemical reactions, the narrator explains the details of a double replacement reaction in chemistry. Following the simulation, the narrator shows what the reaction looks like using real chemicals. the use of Legos makes visible what would otherwise be invisible to the naked eye. The developer places the importance of the double replacement within the context of modern chemical reactions, particularly those that occur in sewage treatment. This is a very clear, interesting piece that the narrator uses as supplemental material in a chemistry class. Length, 2.5 minutes. School train. Glenn Bledsoe's fourth graders created this in response to a language arts assignment requiring them to show that they understood the concept of metaphor. In this unique new media project, the students used sophisticated music and editing techniques as they compared going to school with riding on a train. The narrative is challenging because it doesn't so much tell a story as simply present the similarities between the two experiences, rather matter-of-factly and with no sense of plot or expectation. The unusual music and use of graphics gives the feeling of being on a train. It's the kind of media piece that tends to either excite traditional educators about education in the digital age or inspire them to consider retirement. Narration is told by a number of students in both English and Spanish. Length, 4 minutes. Next exit. This is by Dana Atchley, one of the original founders of the digital story movement, who tragically died in 2000, but left behind a body of work and a legacy that helped define the possibilities of DST. On the web, Next Exit is an interactive digital story that allows viewers to choose between a number of stories Dana tells about his life. I saw a video recording of a live performance of Next Exit in which Dana told stories in traditional oral fashion while a computer-generated environment that he created played behind him. Of particular note was a digitally produced campfire, creating a high-tech version of an old-time campfire storytelling experience. Length variable, because it's user-driven. Making a ball roll. This was created by a fourth-grade mathematics class at Malala Elementary School under the direction of technology teacher Glenn Bledsoe. The students used animation software to create a story about how to make a ball roll on a beach. As the story unfolds, the narration explains a problem that has occurred. The ball skids along the sand instead of rolling. The students clearly explain their error and describe how they developed a more mathematically sound approach to their project. In the end, the ball rolls. The animation is accompanied by subtle background music. The voiceover narration is told by a number of students. Animation includes creating a beach and the rolling ball, as well as drawing mathematical models. Length, 2 minutes. Creative awakening. This is a personal journey through 2 decades of wrestling with the ebb and flow of personal creativity in the storyteller's life that leads to the eventual rediscovery of the artist within. The storyteller used still images, including a number of images of her artwork, voiceover narration, and standard kinds of titling and transitions. No music was added, which, counterintuitively, actually adds to the story's power. Length, 8 minutes. Eddie the Grape. A story about how Eddie the Grape and his friends rescue Grandpa Grape, who gets scooped up by a cereal company. The characters in the story are actually green grapes, sporting faces drawn with magic marker. The format is a series of still images of the grapes and voiceover narration. It's light, fun, and interesting. Length, 5 minutes. My Life. This story is told by a teenager in drug recovery who struggles to live with a parent who also has substance abuse problems. One day, she's on a hike and witnesses one animal attacking another and compares herself to being the animal that loses the fight. This compelling piece uses still images, voiceover narration, and music from her generation. Length, 2 minutes. Dialoguing about digital stories, what teachers talk about. For most teachers, watching the stories is largely an exercise in seeing. They find themselves confronted by truly new material that challenges their preconceptions about student work in content areas. As a result, they struggle, often enthusiastically, to grasp what they are watching. The conversations that follow viewing the stories are often filled with the feelings associated with discovering new territory, excitement about being in a foreign land, anxiety about not understanding the native language, in this case, the language of media, and frustration as they struggle to remain open-minded. It is my job to act as a guide, explaining digital stories in terms of their historical perspective, points of interest, component parts, and connections with their own personal and professional lives. I've grouped the discussion topics into 3 categories. 1. Story type, purpose, or impact. 2. Story elements. And 3. Story production. A continuum accompanies each topic that describes a range of consideration. In all cases, the traits represent questions teachers can ask themselves or perspectives they can consider before assigning a DST project to their students. While these traits overlap and can often defy strict definition, they have great utility in terms of helping teachers frame what it is they are seeking in student projects and what is desirable and manageable within the constraints of their curricula and classrooms. Category 1. Story type, purpose, or impact. Given the need to have digital stories driven by academic goals, teachers talked about the different kinds of stories they watched and how seeing stories in terms of their type, purpose, and overall impact could help them determine how to approach DST in content areas. What follows are the basic topic areas that emerged from that discussion. Essay versus poem. I found that the most important aspect of a DST assignment that teachers need to address when articulating project expectations can be summarized symbolically by the following question. Are students expected to create an essay, a poem, or something in between? The significance of the notion of essay versus poem as it's used here has to do with audience expectation. Readers expect essayists to work hard to make their points clearly so that they can read without interruption. Good prose should pass through the eyes and into the mind fairly effortlessly on a mechanical level. We may be challenged by the ideas, but not by the writing. On the other hand, readers expect to be challenged by poetry. When we read poetry, we often assume we'll need to read things more than once, and that ambiguity and imagery frowned upon in essay writing are often used by poets to convey insight and meaning. In short, we expect to work harder to understand a poem than we do to understand an essay. Thus, the continuum for this trait is bounded by clear, like an essay, on one end, and challenging, like a poem, on the other. Bottom line, if students are creating a digital story as an essay, then assessment is simplified tremendously. If the story is not intelligible to the evaluator or the audience, then it needs more work, regardless of whether the creator agrees. However, we always have to keep in mind that unlike the written language, which has had centuries to evolve in terms of syntax and expression, new media expression is in a constant state of flux. Teachers need to decide how much of the responsibility they want to assume in not understanding material presented via digital story. If students are writing poetry, as the metaphor has been used here, then teachers need to use other assessment yardsticks, presumably with more latitude. I recommend that students start with essays, essentially mini-documentaries, and then graduate to more abstract forms of expression. Choosing your metaphor or genre. To help orient teachers to the world of DST, I sometimes ask them to choose the appropriate metaphor for each story we watch. Is a digital story a historical documentary, a short action movie, a teaching story, a fantasy, a visual poem, a personal story? Superbugs is pretty much a teaching story, as in Double Replacement Reaction. Eddie the Grape is a short action movie. A Day at School and My Piano are both personal stories, although My Piano also functions as a documentary, and so on. Identifying a metaphor allows teachers to use some of the tools they have already developed when assessing student work created with more traditional media. Thinking in terms of metaphor can also be helpful when aligning story type with curricular goals. A theme that runs throughout my workshops is that digital stories are very new adaptations of an ancient activity. Seeing what is old is a safe and instructive place to start. Another way to view metaphor is in terms of genre. In Story, the Bible of Aspiring Screenwriters, author McGee says that when writing a movie story, writers have to select a genre and stay within it or else risk audience alienation. A serious murder mystery can't suddenly turn into a hilarious farce. An action movie can't suddenly morph completely into a romantic comedy, and so on. The same is roughly true for digital stories. Genre consistency helps create an effective story. Bottom line, thinking about project requirements in terms of metaphor or genre can help teachers focus on the best way for students to approach creating a story for digital production. Having students identify a metaphor or genre in the planning stages of story development provides a handy metric for teachers to use to help students stay on track. Resonant versus non-resonant stories. One of my favorite questions to ask teachers after watching a digital story is simply, "So, how did that work for you as a story?" It's a trick question, of course, because story means different things to different people. But conversations typically converge on the idea of resonance in one form or another. Simply put, a story resonates when others can relate to it. While a story may involve experiences that are completely foreign to listeners, it can still act as a lens that helps listeners see themselves more clearly. In short, a story resonates when it reminds listeners of their own stories. This is certainly the case with A Day at School and My Life, though the struggles they described often made mine seem insignificant. My Piano tends to remind viewers of something their parents made them do, for which they are now grateful. Creative Awakening stimulates reflection about following our own path of awakening and so on. Stories might resonate because they are universal, a concept discussed in Part 2. If that is the case, then by definition, they should resonate with everyone. Sometimes in workshops I find this to be the case, but other times, A story resonates with some and not with others, a kind of niche resonance. This helps define the audience that can relate to and benefit from the story. Bear in mind that stories can satisfy listeners for reasons other than resonance, such as simply being interesting, helpful, or entertaining. But resonance is linked to memorability. When a story resonates, it tends to stick with us long after we hear it. Memorable stories resonate by allowing listeners to relate to them. When assigning digital stories to students, teachers need to decide whether resonance, universal or niche, is important, and if so, how to determine whether resonance has been achieved. In the section on story elements, I discuss a number of the story qualities that can contribute to resonance. Story versus report. Earlier, I noted that one of the hallmarks of a good story is that you don't really notice it, at least not while you're watching it. This begs the question, what is the role of active critical thinking in the pedagogy of storytelling? In fact, combining the engagement of stories with the reflection encouraged by less emotionally involving kinds of media, such as reports and essays, is one of the most exciting and interesting challenges facing teaching digital age students. It gives birth to creatical thinking, discussed earlier. The reality is that most creative endeavors are a combination of flow and reflection, which leads to new directions. That is, we engage with the creative process and then pause, zoom out, assess what we have done, and then adjust our efforts. As students blend storytelling and analysis, they will have the best of both worlds. Bear in mind that engagement may be in full play as students research reports, just as analysis may be a key component in developing a story. In this trait, I'm talking about story presentation, not preparation. As teachers discuss this aspect of DST, I recommended that they not think about story versus report in either-or terms, because most school media projects have the potential to be some combination of the two. Instead, it's more helpful to think about media in terms of where they fall on the continuum shown here. My Life is a documentary with first-person reflection. Superbugs is a story designed to report about a particular medical phenomenon. Making a Ball Roll could have been just a report, but because the students encountered a mystery they had to solve, was part story, and so on. Incidentally, this continuum can also be used to frame discussions of professional media, especially the news. Ideally, if the goal of news is a presentation of the facts, then it should be all report and no story. Yet most of us wouldn't watch news that was presented in such a manner. What does this say about the nature of reporting that we depend on for our window into the world? Bottom line, when planning student media projects, it can be helpful for teachers to identify a point on the continuum that they want students to aim for. Half report, half story, all story, mostly story, but with academic information embedded in the plot. Similarly, when students analyze media, it can be helpful to have them identify where on the continuum particular media pieces fall. As a rule of thumb, I advise teachers who are interested in academic storytelling to aim for the middle of the continuum, combining the engagement of the story form with the application of academic focus in equal measure. Passive viewing, watching media non-reflectively with no intention of asking questions. Active viewing, watching media critically in order to answer questions. Passive viewing versus active viewing. Another way to frame the discussion of critical thinking in media production is passive viewing versus active media viewing from the story listener's perspective. Passive viewing can be thought of as story mode, or to others, entertainment mode, in which students view media without reflection, both during and afterward. Active viewing is the opposite and typically involves engaging students in the following ways. 1. Assigning them questions to address based on the viewing. 2. Requiring them to take notes during the viewing. 3. Providing them time to reflect on and write about the assigned questions directly following the viewing. And 4. Engaging them in a class discussion following their reflective writing. Active viewing feels very much like an unnatural act for TV watchers, but it opens up a more effective way to mine video, movie, and television material for academic utility. Teachers may want to consider where on the viewing continuum they want students' projects to fall when creating digital stories from the listener's perspective. Bottom line, decide whether you want students to create a story that is intended to be actively viewed. If so, include the development of active viewing questions as part of the assignment. Teaching about myself versus myself teaching about something. A variation of the theme story versus report is teaching about myself versus myself teaching about something. Teachers are always moved by students telling personal stories in their own words and images, like A Day at School, Creative Awakening, and My Life. These kinds of stories can reflect assignments in language arts, history, geography, and culture studies. But within an educational context, teachers may want students to demonstrate their understanding of content area material, which is why I also show them myself teaching about something stories, like Superbugs, Making a Ball Roll, and School Train. These kinds of stories seem to be of more interest to science and math teachers, who I've found are typically less likely to make a connection between storytelling and classroom activities. Bottom line, the natural propensity for students is to tell personal stories rather than academically oriented stories. Deciding how important content is and where on the continuum you want students to aim can be very helpful in explaining story expectations. Also, keep in mind that telling stories that are both personal and academic is an exciting academic frontier that most certainly will develop in the coming years. Category 2, Story Elements. This category addresses the story traits that teachers found important in the stories I showed them. Most of these traits will not be new to language arts teachers, as they are typically addressed in any creative writing class. They also mirror many of the digital story traits addressed by Lambert in Digital Storytelling Cookbook and Traveling Companion, a good source for this topic. Point of view. Teachers often note the many different points of view employed in the stories I showed them. Fox Becomes a Better Person uses what I call third-person magical, in which animals assume human qualities and tell their story with the help of an omniscient narrator. Making a Ball Roll uses third-person plural as the students talk in terms of we doing and discovering things. My Life and Creative Awakening are told in first-person in a highly personal way, while King John is told in first-person historical. Eddie the Grape uses an omniscient narrator. Superbugs uses a didactic conversation between two people who speak in the first person. A Day at School is in first person with overtones of third-person narration as she reports about the events of her day, and so on. Bottom line, the range of points of view that can be employed in digital stories is vast and is constrained only by whatever perspective or assignment requirements teachers want to impose. Teachers may want students to create a very personal reflection in language arts class versus a more objective documentary about a local historical event in social studies. Or they may simply want to throw it open to students to choose their own point of view, as long as they meet the goals of the assignment. Emotional engagement. Emotional engagement is always a topic teachers like to discuss, often emotionally, when debriefing about the stories they watch. Initially, teachers tend to have the same expectations of digital stories that they have of any media production. If they are not moved by what they watch, then the piece has failed on some level. However, I purposely show a number of different kinds of stories, from the detached to the emotionally overwhelming, in order to help teachers expand their notion of story value. A Day at School is overwhelmingly an emotional experience as we listen to a physically challenged elementary school student speak through a voice machine about the simple pleasures of a day at school, while heart-wrenching music plays in the background. On the other end of the spectrum, Superbugs and Double Replacement Reaction are pleasant but far less emotional, aiming for engagement by telling a learning story. In the middle, but leaning toward the emotional end of the spectrum, is My Piano, which engages listeners by reminding them of their struggles of being pressured by their parents to do something they didn't want to do, but that they appreciated later in life. Also in the middle is Elizabeth Peratrovich, An Alaskan Hero, which balances emotional appeal with the presentation of historical research. In the middle, but leaning toward the less emotional end of the spectrum, is Making a Ball Roll. Watching kids figure something out always has emotional appeal at some level. An interesting aside about this piece, the storyteller's use of music is not emotional in a typical sense, but is very captivating. It's so subtle that it can generally be detected only on a second viewing. Sometimes, teachers speak in terms of emotional versus intellectual engagement. That is, some of the less emotionally engaging stories are nevertheless interesting enough to sustain their attention. To me, this translates into a story having a good story core, discussed in Part 2, and the teller having enough finesse to make story listeners want to know what is going to happen next. Bottom line, most of us are unconsciously inclined to judge digital stories the same way we judge entertainment media, in terms of their emotional engagement. That is, the more emotionally engaging a media piece is, the better. We do this largely because most of our experience with media has been watching entertainment material in passive viewing mode. However, teachers need to determine how much emotional engagement and how much objective argument is appropriate for the projects they assign. I've been part of a number of fascinating conversations about how emotionally engaging stories should be, particularly in the areas of math and science. Teachers have a very real concern about whether the standards that drive consumer media should also be used for media created within an educational context. Also, teachers may want to outlaw what I call cheap shots, music or images that will evoke strong emotions regardless of the strength of the story. More about this later, when I discuss the grammar of media. Tone. Teachers typically like to talk about the different tones that are employed in the digital stories I show. Edie the Grape is humorous. My Life is edgy. Elizabeth Peratrovich is serious. Creative Awakening is introspective and a bit sad. Superbugs is upbeat, and so on. Teachers tend to feel that much of what would be acceptable in a writing class regarding tone is also applicable to digital stories. Usually this means that it's important that students write within tone boundaries, aiming for consistency rather than diversity in tone. Switching tones successfully within any piece of narrative is hard to do, no matter what medium is used. Bottom line, like working within a genre, adopting a tone provides a handy yardstick for students and teachers to use to determine whether they are on target or not. Teachers may want to have students choose a tone at the outset, or simply assign students to practice storytelling using a particular tone: somber, straightforward, detached, introspective, sarcastic, funny, gut-wrenching. An interplay of these? Spoken narrative. A fair amount of assessment conversation focuses on how well the narrative worked, and with good reason. Narrative in digital stories, whether spoken or performed, tends to carry the story. Incidentally, the emphasis on the narrative is nearly universal among teachers in my workshops. Math teachers are just as interested in it as language arts teachers, and are equally demanding about the need for a focused narrative that is clear and articulate. It's always interesting to listen to teachers compare written narrative with the spoken narrative they hear in digital stories. Some aspects carry forward easily from writing, like tone and pacing. Others do not, like inflection and mixing voice with music. Also interesting are the conversations that inevitably occur about more technical aspects of voice recording and how they impact the quality of the story. More about this in Chapter 14. All of this is relatively new territory for most teachers and is very important, given that all the digital stories I show them involve a spoken audio component, whether as voiceover narration or the audio component of a video recording. While spoken narrative is not mandatory in digital stories, it's almost always present. The conversation also tends to address the link between written and spoken narrative, and the writing opportunities that scripted narration provides. In fact, a recurring area of interest is whether scripting should be required or students should be allowed to just speak extemporaneously. While unscripted conversation may certainly be useful, I recommend teachers include writing whenever possible, because it encourages reflection, which results in better work. Writing also produces artifacts for assessment purposes. Bottom line, narrative is the foundation of most digital stories. Therefore, teachers should be interested in whether students give narrative the appropriate amount of focus in their stories. Fortunately, teachers feel comfortable focusing on its importance, largely because it's an element that is shared between digital and non-digital stories. Teachers should determine how they are going to assess narrative before assigning a digital story project. I recommend that written components of a digital story be included in the story's overall portfolio. Soundtrack music. The audio component of the story usually also includes music, which introduces both opportunities and challenges. On the one hand, music is very compelling. On the other, it can be so emotionally engaging all on its own that it can easily overwhelm a story, or worse, compensate for the lack of a story. Developing an overdependence on music is a convenient way for students to become lazy about articulating their stories. This is usually unconscious laziness. In their minds, the music evokes the feeling they are trying to convey. Therefore, the reflection, scripting, and story production that teachers might want to emphasize seems superfluous. But if students allow the music to generate the impact for them, then they are effectively allowing someone else to tell their story. Consider this interesting reference point. Creative Awakening is 8 minutes long, and is all about a personal journey to overcome personal insecurities in order to reconnect with the artist within. It uses no music at all, yet is extremely powerful. A note about music videos. If students are assigned to create music videos rather than more traditional digital stories, then the relationship between music and narrative reverses. That is, narrative serves the music. However, in the absence of a specific musical focus, music should serve the narrative. Bottom line. Teachers need to address how much music they will allow in the digital stories they assign, and how much sway it's allowed to have over the narrative. I encourage teachers to experiment with the entire length of the continuum, and especially to challenge students to use no music at all as a litmus test for the quality of their stories. Teachers should feel free to challenge students on whether they have used music in an appropriately supportive role. Also, mixing music effectively so that it doesn't drown out the voice narrative, a common problem, should be addressed in the assignment expectations. I discuss this and other aspects of producing effective soundtracks in Chapter 14 on Media Grammar. Role of video and performance. Note that all of the digital stories I described involve the use of still images accompanied by narration and music, while only two of them have strong video recorded performance components. The use of still images with voiceover narration and the exclusion of video material is a common format for digital stories for a number of reasons, including simplicity and low cost. For the uninitiated, I found that the difficulties in using video in DST can truly be understood only through direct experience. Using video tends to be more complex, time-consuming, and costly to create and edit than other DST approaches, such as the use of still images and voiceover narration. As video has become easier to use and edit, the situation has changed. The ability to record video on the fly with an iPad or a smartphone has ensured that video is a part of everyone's personal library. Easy-to-use programs like Movie Maker on the PC and iMovie on the Mac platform, as well as the software now available on any kind of digital device, make editing accessible to anyone with a bit of patience. But video still generally takes more time than using still images, and is harder to shoot at a professional level. As a teacher, you may want to determine video production's role based on the time available to you for your digital storytelling project. However, video offers something that still imagery doesn't, the use of recorded performance. You may want to encourage video recorded performance because you might want students to improve their speaking, acting, or presentation abilities. You may also want them to add speaking and performance to a portfolio to show their progress in this skill area over time. Also keep in mind that there are many sources of video other than student performances, such as interviews, community events, science experiments, and even TV and movie footage, with obvious copyright concerns, addressed in Part 3. A note about still images and digital stories. Make sure students know the gamut of still images available to them so that they can make wise choices about image use. They come in many forms: charts, graphs, original drawings, and photos, scanned objects, and so on, all of which have the capacity to be useful as well as distracting. Matching media with communication goals is key. Bottom line, teachers should consider the kinds of visual images they want students to use and make sure they have the technology and time in their curriculum to accommodate their use. As always, the use of visuals should be driven by learning and communication goals, with particular attention paid to the decision of whether to use video. Above all, make sure the use of video provides an academic payoff that is worth the complexity it brings to the story development process. Creativity, originality, and creatical thinking. After showing digital stories to a group of educators, I like to ask, who thinks every student should be capable of this kind of media production? Nearly every hand goes up every time. Then I ask, how many of you have the support to pursue that goal in your classrooms? Very few hands go up. The ensuing conversation often focuses on the importance of creativity, that elusive quality that seems to be at odds with the world of standardized testing and getting the right answer. When teachers watch digital stories, they recognize an originality of voice they don't often see in other schoolwork. They also see evidence of creativity skills important in the real world of the digital economy that are not being addressed in school. Recall my earlier reference to creatical thinking. This refers to the ability to combine creative and critical thinking into an original, reflective piece of work through an iterative process of creation, reflection, adjustment. Once it is explained to a group of educators or parents, there is general approbation that creatical thinking should be at the top of every school's goals for its students. But getting there seems mired in concerns about testing, annual progress reports, and so on. I find that teachers want to honor creativity in their students and enjoy talking about how to do so. Because creativity goes largely unrecognized in schoolwork, they realize that they have had to come up with original ways to honor the originality they find in student work. We should not confuse fiction versus nonfiction with creative versus non-creative. This is a misperception that I often bump into in my conversations with educators. The implication here is that a nonfiction production, like a mini-documentary, or a DST explaining a science concept, should be purposely non-creative in order to ensure its factual nature. Creativity is a way of seeing the world. Creative thinking is a way of turning what you see into an original, thoughtful product. This can be used in nearly any area of human enterprise, including creating media that conveys facts. A note of warning, while digital tools can encourage students to find the creative storyteller within, this does not guarantee originality. I've seen stories that look like canned TV, or that use images and soundtracks that are very cliched. The world of infinite possibilities includes everything from the sublime to the banal. Bottom line, if teachers are looking for creativity, originality, and creatical thinking in student work, they need to be clear about their expectations. One approach, teachers can require that a certain percentage of the music, photos, or other elements that students use be original. Also, they can talk about storyline in terms of being original, borrowed, or something in between. Time, story length, and economy. A common first comment from teachers after watching a digital story is, "How much time did that take to do?" The subtext here is that teachers are already slammed for time, and anything that is going to make that situation worse is unwelcome. Ultimately, the conversation turns to considerations of time spent versus benefits derived, which is something teachers deal with all the time as they address ever-expanding content areas and demands for student testing. I found that if a teacher's school or district does not value digital skill building, then DST typically attracts only the innovators, that small percentage of the teachers who are willing to be excited by the possibilities of DST despite their lack of support. There is a direct connection between the length of stories that students produce and the amount of classroom time required to produce them. Roughly speaking, 4-minute stories will take about twice as long to produce as 2-minute stories. While this sounds like something Captain Obvious might say, it's nonetheless important to point out to teachers who may not have a grasp of the time involved in producing new media. Let me be clear about my bias here. Even if classroom time were abundant, I would still prefer pieces that hover around 2 to 4 minutes in length because they produce economy of expression. The shorter time frame forces storytellers to weed out what isn't truly important and prioritize what is. It compels them to plan carefully, write more, and really think about what it is they're trying to say. 2 to 4 minutes is also very digestible to story listeners as well as teachers who may need to assess 30 projects from a single class. For those concerned that producing something that is only 2 to 4 minutes in length may not present enough of a challenge for students, I assure you that anyone who has created a digital story would disagree. Another way to constrain project length is to limit the input. In Digital Storytelling Cookbook and Traveling Companion, author Joe Lambert notes that economy is often the largest problem for storytellers, and therefore he recommends limiting the amount of media that storytellers can use. Thus, requiring that students use no more than a particular number of images will naturally limit the length of the story they tell. Bottom line, to enforce economy and make DST work within the time constraints of classroom life, it can be helpful for teachers to create specific digital story requirements about length, number of media components students can use, and other variables related to how long a project can be. Category 3, story production. While the stories I show teachers may seem somewhat familiar to them as media consumers, they are quite new to them as media producers, largely because producing media is not something they have had much experience doing. This fact leads to discussions about story production and the more technical aspects of producing new media, which are addressed here. It also leads to discussions about how to address the fact that students are generally more comfortable with digital technology than teachers are, and how teachers can best manage their students' skills within the context of a learning assignment. Production values. Participants often discuss the difference between the stories in terms of polish, how finished, glitzy, or professional a piece is, depending upon your viewpoint. Typically, the term used in media circles to describe this aspect of media production is production values. The more polished the piece, the higher the production values employed by its creators. Media productions that have high production values are directly analogous to magazine articles that have been thoroughly edited and are considered, in the parlance of the publishing world, camera ready. While it might seem like a no-brainer to require new media production that has high production values, after all, who wants to create or watch media that is less than it could be, there are some things for teachers to consider before doing so. Most important, teachers need to consider that media production takes time, as does good writing, a fact that often dissuades teachers from including it in an already crowded curriculum. Furthermore, the higher the production values, the more time it takes. We are at the point with new media production technology where we were with very early word processors. Media is much easier to produce than it ever has been, but it is not quite what I would call truly easy yet. Seemingly slight increments in the refinement of digital stories can often seem to take an inordinate amount of time, as the technology gets cheaper, easier to use, more distributed, and more second nature. This will change. In the meantime, I advise teachers to consider the rule of 80-20. You can produce 80% of a high-quality, high-production-value digital story in 20% of the overall time that it takes to create the entire story. The last 20% of your story, the polished, often glitzy high end of production, takes 80% of your time, attention, and aggravation. That is, after you complete your story and have done everything except apply all the polish, you've produced your story in a fraction of the time required for high production value work. This is typically the point at which you hit the production wall. Scaling it takes a lot of work, 80% more work. This begs the question, is it worth spending 80% of the time and energy to produce the last 20% of a finished piece? Typically, I say no. That is, when the production wall looms, say good enough. And take heart. Not only will digital media become easier to produce as the technology becomes easier and cheaper, but one day school districts will authorize and even demand that students produce media with high production values. I fully expect that sometime in the not-too-distant future, high school students will be expected to create well-produced media as part of their e-portfolios. This will make it much easier to make the case for having students create finished digital stories, thus justifying the time and budget necessary to do so. Bottom line, teachers consistently cite the time required to produce new media as a reason for not considering using DST in the classroom. My advice? Rather than not considering doing DST at all, consider forgetting the last 20% of high-end production. While the final product might be rougher than teachers and storytellers might like, 80% complete and 20% of the time still looks good. This is an effective way for teachers to get their feet wet with media production in their classrooms, and to learn how to more carefully budget their time and resources next time around. Moral of the story? Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Often quoted, but source unknown. Media grammar. In Chapter 14, I look at specific aspects of media grammar as they apply to DST. Here, I introduce the topic and show how it helps facilitate a conversation about the more technical aspects of new media projects for those uncomfortable or unfamiliar with technical issues. After watching a digital story, teachers usually want to know something about how it was made. Sometimes this is simply tech talk, but at other times it involves discussion of what I call media grammar. I usually introduce this topic by explaining that just as with writing, some new media creation techniques work better than others. New media has its own version of grammatical infractions, like run-ons, fragments, and misspelled words, as well as its own version of clear, organized presentation and effective modifier use. The use of familiar grammar terminology to discuss aspects of new media is often helpful. However, as teachers discuss media grammar, they discover quickly that it's not nearly as well-developed or as widely shared as grammar for writing. To help clarify the situation, I comment that if I were to give each of them an essay to assess, most would converge on similar but not identical assessments that value certain aspects of good writing that many of us have grown up with over the years. However, this does not happen when I show them a digital story. One teacher's source of confusion is another's unifying concept. What is cited as a distracting or unclear digital story can vary greatly from one viewer to the next. In addition, just as poetry does not hew to the grammar of prose, some media will bend or ignore rules that apply to more straightforward media presentations. Breaking the rules effectively can be the hallmark of an emerging art form or simply an example of using one's own voice, hopefully in an effective and compelling way. But breaking the rules can also be an ineffective use of media with no particular payoff for the audience. Recall the earlier discussion about whether a digital story is, metaphorically speaking, an essay or a poem. This distinction becomes particularly important in regard to media grammar. As we approach the area of media grammar, we need to keep in mind that most of us have developed our sense of writing grammar as both consumers, readers, and producers, writers. This is not the case with new media. Many teachers tend to be new media consumers and know what works for them largely from the perspective of someone who watches TV programming, movies, and internet material. Thus, the reflective component that accompanies writing when attempting to write clearly for an audience is often an experience teachers have not had with new media. The vital conversation that we need to have with peers, experts, and ourselves about communicating what we want to say with new media has not taken place. Bottom line, the degree of importance that is attached to media grammar will vary from project to project, and from teacher to teacher. However, teachers will need to teach and/or model whatever grammar they expect students to observe, and make sure that students know that they are being assessed on its use. Equipment needed. The stories I show teachers provide a rich context for the discussion of the very real issue of resources and equipment access needed for students to create digital stories. Teachers often have very limited technology budgets, and want to know what hardware and software their students will need in order to create the stories they watch. Fortunately, many of the stories I show use fairly low-tech gear, such as low-budget digital cameras and scanners and free software, such as iMovie on the Mac or Movie Maker on the PC. In fact, I try to use only low-budget gear in my workshops so that teachers have a good chance of transferring what they learn to the realities of their classrooms. An interesting development since writing the first edition of this book has been the emergence of the world of BYOD, Bring Your Own Device, a term used to describe the phenomenon of students bringing their own laptops, touchpads, smartphones, and other digital devices to school, rather than depending on the school to provide computers for them. BYOD is a direct result of the rapid evolution of digital devices. Schools struggled first to find the money for desktops, then laptops, and now some are buying iPads. But other districts are simply giving up ever keeping pace and are turning to students to bring their own devices to school. In this sense, we are asking students to be like us, in that adults are often expected to bring their own phones and digital devices to work. BYOD potentially throws IT departments into disarray, as they have depended on uniformity to simplify maintaining computers for many years. But given that our current technological trajectory promises unfathomable roller coaster innovation with no braking system, BYOD seems inevitable as the only way to keep pace. Schools simply won't be able to afford to do it on their own, at least not within current administrative structures. This has tremendous upsides. students will use their equipment, which they have customized with the software they understand, bridging the worlds of work, school, and home very definitively. An obvious downside is that BYOD could send the digital divide into overdrive. Schools will need backup plans for those who cannot afford personal computing gear. No matter what you use, whether you bring it from home or find it at school, take heart. In the DST world, there is a great deal you can do with very little. However, stories like School Train and Fox Becomes a Better Person require extra hardware and software. While tools should not drive curricular goals, they can't help but define their possibilities. Talking about technology requirements is healthy and helps bring a sense of reality to producing new media in the classroom. It also helps teachers understand what they need to consider when budget talks are on the table. I provided a brief overview of the technology needed for digital stories in the preface and discuss it in more detail in Part 3. Bottom line, teachers need to determine what they need and what they have access to before embarking on a DST project. Typically, they need sustained equipment access for a week or two, or ongoing access if DST is a routine activity. If there are not enough computers to allow each student to work alone, then teachers need to consider staggering student projects and/or assigning team-based DST projects. Role of help, tech support, and the teacher. Teachers invariably want to know how much help students received in creating the digital stories I show them, especially for the more wowy pieces like School Train and Fox Becomes a Better Person. Teachers have a number of justifiable concerns in this area. First, they're concerned about students doing their own work and how much outside help is acceptable or desirable. The stories I show them represent the gamut in this regard. For most projects, students worked alone, receiving just-in-time training as needed from peers, friends, mentors, and web sources. But other projects involved some teacher or professional help. For example, Glenn Bledsoe reports that students received brief but crucial help from him to create Making a Ball Roll. The chroma key editing in Fox Becomes a Better Person was done by editors, not the students, because we ran out of time. However, in other green screen projects, I required students as young as fourth grade to complete all aspects of technical production, which they do with no problem and a good deal of enthusiasm. Teachers see help as everything from an acceptable part of the process to an unfair advantage that restricts learning. Second, teachers are concerned about how to provide help to digital age students who typically know more technically than they do. I promote the use of learning communities, students helping each other by making their expertise available to each other. This exists within the classroom as an immediate learning community, as well as through learning communities facilitated by using social media via the web. Interestingly, this conversation also leads teachers to wonder about the role of tech support at their schools. Technical support comes in many types, from fix-it help to professional development. Sometimes support is available to help teachers with projects like DST. I found that when such support exists, it's incredibly helpful. Determining what help is available is definitely worth investigating. Last, a related interest is the issue of students working alone versus working in groups. Ideally, both approaches should be used. When students create personal stories, their narrative has to be crafted individually. However, within this context, students can still work collaboratively to solve each other's technical problems, review each other's work, and so on. Beyond projects of individual significance, there is great value in having students work together, particularly for longer projects, given that media projects tend to be team-based in the real world of media development. Bottom line, teachers need to decide to what degree seeking help is part of the process. They need to determine ahead of time what help exists in their schools or districts, and how they want to structure, encourage, and reward students for helping each other with their DST projects. The role of social media. Since writing the first edition of this book, the world of social media has exploded. Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Pinterest, to name just a few, have produced new possibilities in the world of narrative and expression. Today, September 1st, 2012, I received a link to a list of resources that can enhance the digital storytelling experience. The resources consisted of Powtoon, Kerpoof, GoAnimate, SlideRocket, ToonDo, ZooBurst, VoiceThread, ToonTastic, to name a few. In terms of receiving information about resources, today was simply an average day. In addition, there are websites that allow cooperative video editing, the way Google Pages allows cooperative text editing. There are websites, including YouTube, that allow various degrees of online video editing, allowing users to upload video, edit it, and download the final product. The world of social media has led directly to growing interest in transmedia storytelling, or stories that are told across a number of media. Transmedia storytelling is addressed later in this book, and so on. By and large, teacher conversations about the use of social media are focused on less pleasant issues such as privacy, accessibility, given much of social media is often blocked at school, personal safety, its tendency to distract students, and so on. Seeing its potential in the world of digital storytelling can often be, at this point in history, a forced conversation. But here's a quick list of what it offers. A cornucopia of free tools. The web offers access to image editing programs, video mastering programs, virtual reality and augmented reality programs, and much more. A way to exchange ideas, stories. Facebook is the tip of the iceberg. There are any number of ways that students can talk about and collaborate on narrative projects. A way to research stories. Access to colleagues, resources, chat groups, and virtual realities provides rich sources of information and disinformation. Caveat emptor. A way to post and share digital stories. There are many services that facilitate this, like Vimeo, YouTube, TeacherTube, and others. Posting to the world, rather than creating something to be shown to just the teacher for a grade, tends to inspire students to increase their own desire for quality. What is truly interesting about social media is how it is changing the way we think about stories. Essentially, Facebook and other story media resources work like never-ending story generators. The stories they produce are more organic than those developed by a single author or creative team, and take twists and turns that are hard to predict. More about this when we talk about transmedia. Emerging digital stories. What will be important to the future of DST in terms of story purpose, elements, and production? In addition to what I've already described, here is a glimpse. Good, clear, expository writing. This will continue to be essential to new media production far into the future. This could come in many forms, including research, story treatments, scripts, and other documents required in the media world. Whatever students produce, it must be clear, organized, and compelling. Creatical thinking. This will become increasingly important for both personal and professional reasons. It will become personally important for students to produce media that combine reflection and creativity that they can add to their e-portfolios and digital footprints. In this sense, their work does not necessarily need to be original within the grander scheme of the social commons. It just needs to be original for them. However, if students want to pursue media development as a professional and add truly original work to the overall mediascape, they will need finely honed creatical skills to do so. The mediascape is overwhelmed with content, with no let up in sight. In 2011, YouTube reported receiving 2 days' worth of new media every minute. The thoughtfulness and originality of new media will play an important role in terms of gaining recognition. Traditional oral storytelling. As video technology becomes cheaper and easier to use, we will see more oral storytelling appear in digital stories. Short movies. These will more resemble miniature movies than storytelling performances. YouTube points the way in this regard, ensuring that movies will have a place in digital storytelling. Gaming, interactivity, and participation. Games, including educational games, already have user-directed story components, a trend that promises to continue. We should expect increased interactivity and more multi-user digital stories in which the audience participates as both story listener and story creator, the heart and soul of transmedia. Transmedia storytelling. Transmedia is much bigger than gaming and participation. It is an evolving approach to storytelling that involves using every medium at our disposal to tell stories across media. The literal meaning of transmedia, in order to involve viewers as deeply and broadly as possible. This can involve the use of books, websites, TV shows, movies, user-driven plot development, social media, even GPS, that allows audience members to go to actual places to continue the story. The elements listed here are the tip of the iceberg. Literally, any advancement in digital technology that has narrative implications will be folded into an overall approach to narrative development referred to as transmedia storytelling. More about transmedia storytelling later in the book. Green screen and other advanced movie techniques. We can expect students to want to use the same tools that are used to create the media they experience in their own lives, such as the use of green screen chroma keying in Fox Becomes a Better Person. Green screening is just the beginning. Whatever tools the entertainment industry uses will show up in education at some point in some manner. Animation. One of the advanced movie techniques that are becoming increasingly affordable and more common is animation. We should expect students to want to use voiceover animation, looking much like scaled-down versions of box office hits, such as Toy Story. We should also expect stop-action animation using real people, claymation, and other approaches. In addition, programs like Flash are making motion-based multimedia a very useful storytelling tool. Inclusion of original artwork and music. Copyright constraints, easy-to-use software like GarageBand, and the desire to create something truly original will compel digital storytellers to include more and more original work. The eventual recognition of the importance of art and design literacy, art being the fourth R, will also help this along. This will include semi-original artwork, the domain of the mashup. Art stories. It was McLuhan who noted that new media are used to do the work of old media until we figure out what the new media offer the world of communication that is truly new. When we do, we verge on a new art form, One kind of digital story that promises to increase is, for lack of a better phrase, the art story. I don't mean artistically told conventional stories, but truly new creations. We can guess what these might look like, but in many cases we don't know what they are until they arrive. Increasingly, art and media classes will look to the DST format as a canvas, voice, and stage. VR, holography, haptics, motion sensing, and other advanced technologies. As I noted earlier, I know only one thing about the technologies that await us in the future. We will find ways to tell stories with them. Every new technology that reaches a classroom, or that students import into the classroom from their personal lives, will be used by digital storytellers. In fact, digital innovators who want to discover the capabilities of new software and hardware will do well to give it to DST students and ask them to create something with it. Advanced editing techniques. Earlier, I noted that we should expect to see more video material in digital stories as it becomes cheaper and easier to use. While this is true, we should also expect technique creep. That is, what passes as acceptable edited video today won't pass tomorrow. Recall how quickly dot matrix printouts fell out of favor. As our capabilities advance, so do our expectations. The result is that the leading edge becomes cliché very quickly in the tech ecosystem. Editing as an art form will continue to grow, much as it has in print media. Also keep an eye out for the self-editing technology that will adjust images on the fly to make you look better or make your story look, ironically, more realistic. Distributed, collaborative, and shared stories and story spaces. The internet provides an international stage for digital storytellers. As it morphs into Web 2.0, it also facilitates interactivity and participation locally and at a distance, allowing students to share and collaborate on digital stories. A special form of distributed shared stories will occur in story spaces, specialized electronic communities that specialize in storytelling. They will be facilitated through the use of avatars and other virtual representational entities. This is already happening to some extent and will continue to grow in popularity. We should also expect projected real performances using video techniques such as green screening. Beam me up may be a ways off, but project me there is already here. Role blur. Storytelling and story producer merge. Podcasting and vodcasting suggest that the same thing will happen to storytellers that has happened to artists and musicians. The division between artist, producer, and distributor will blur beyond recognition. While role blur gives artists more to do, it also gives them more control over what they do and how they distribute their work. Storytelling becomes the entire process, from conception to development to distribution and performance and everything in between. A good story. All of the technology that is coming down the pike should be both exciting and worrisome. With each advance in DST tools, we also advance our ability to say less with more. Beginning with a good story will become more important than ever in DST. Telling stories effectively, regardless of the media, will be crucial. Within our classrooms, it will be up to teachers to help students ensure that the technology serves the story and not the other way around. It will be very interesting to watch the impact of transmedia storytelling on conventional notions of narrative. Certainly, plot lines will become more involving, diverse, and open-ended. But my guess is that many of the notions of what has made a story personally involving for millennia will remain intact, though they may be expressed in different forms. We shall see.